Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, good morning, and welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elz. I am joined in studio by Brian Svensson.
Hey, what's shaking?
On the phone by Chris Suk.
Hey, how's it going? I'm in sunny Kenora right now.
Is it warmer in Kenora than it is in Winnipeg today? I haven't checked the old AccuWeather.
I would say it's probably about the same. There's a bit of a north wind going here.
A little cool wind and a bit of overcast. Despite that, it is still baseball season. This past weekend, of course, we mentioned the open house at Shaw Park. Things are starting to gear up towards the Fish home opener on the 25th. Really only a couple weeks away at this point. In fact, 2 weeks from today.
Yep, playing the Sioux Falls Canaries.
So we're going to be talking Fish towards the end of the show, but we always like to start with the big leagues and what's been going on of late. First of all, I like to tip my cap occasionally. I'm going to tip my cap to J.D. Martinez for his solo home run that ended the Yankees' win streak, just because I don't like the Yankees.
FTY.
Oh, that's very nice, Michael.
They had won 8 in a row and 17 of their last 18, and I just appreciate when those end.
Yep, Sam. I can't stand the Yankees, so this is always real good.
I got to be honest here. The Jays hopefully will be in that mix there. But, boy, it looks like the evil empires have come back, both of them, right? Like, they're loaded for bear, especially the Yankees this year here. And, sure, I mean, the crazy thing is I was reading a bit about this is that people are already, you know, hyping this up, like, the way to the playoffs, and they got so many more games. And I got to be honest, it gets a little bit sickening early on in May here. We got lots of baseball. These guys will play another 15 times or whatever, right?
There are many more chickens to be hatched before we start counting these ones. However, I mean, one thing I will say, Mookie Betts having an outstanding season. I mean, certainly probably the one person who's really pushing against Mike Trout in terms of a early MVP favorite.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's still going to be Trout because the man is, unless he gets hurt, the man's on pace for, 14.8 wins above replacement, the most ever in a single season. So, I mean, if Trout even gets over 12, it's a done deal. But Mookie is having himself a heck of a season. Heck of a season.
I feel a bit sometimes with Trout, he reminds me of like LeBron, like in basketball. He has to do something like that to win MVPs now, because just his regular seasons are so good, but people just kind of just take it for granted now. Like,
and so
I mean, it's amazing. Like, Mookie will be in the case for that just because he's had such an amazing year. But you're comparing against, I think Trout gets compared against himself so much that it's hard to quantify sometimes how consistently good he's been over his young career here. But I mean, it seems like it's Trout's to lose here. A big goal just got scored here in Kenora, so it's a big day.
Big goal here.
But anyways, it's fun. I mean, Mookie Betts was a big phenom sort of when he came out as a prospect here, and it looks like he's matched up to his expectations this season.
Yeah, that LeBron comp is something that I heard on the Ringers MLB podcast earlier this week.
I didn't hear that.
Michael Bauman and Ben Lindbergh made the same comp such a consistent level of performance that people start looking for other other opportunities or other candidates just because the consistency of that level would mean if you were just going straight stats, this person would win it every year for like a decade.
Yeah, not only that, but Trout himself isn't exactly... he doesn't present himself like a superstar, right? Like, the guy is absolutely the best player in baseball. He's potentially the best player, or has the potential to be the best player in baseball history. But he doesn't present himself like a superstar, right? Like, he's not Bryce Harper. He's not Clayton Kershaw. He's not going out there and, like, talking himself up.
He's not even the biggest star on his own team right now.
Shohei Ohtani, right. So,
right. And I would say one thing is, I'm going to follow up on this, because me and Michael have talked about this for years, about MLB not promoting these stars.
Oh, they're atrocious.
Mike Trout should be LeBron James, right? Like, I get that Mike Trout's not going to be the most flamboyant, charismatic person, right? But, you know, Bryce Harper is on ads, right? Like I know Trout does, you know, Subway or something like that, but I mean, this guy should be known. People should be talking about this guy like LeBron in regards to like what he's doing.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And it's not like he doesn't have a personality either. The guy has a great sense of humor, and he loves weather. Like, why aren't they promoting like Trout as like get him on weather channels as he's going around like talking about the weather? He loves that stuff. So why not like try and promote him that way? I agree with you.
You know what's even more maddening is it's just that we're baseball nuts and we're all into that and we get it. But the average fan, I don't think knows a lot about Mike Trout. Like, knows not enough about this guy, about what he's doing. This should be destination TV every time he's playing. Right?
Every single time.
Like, when LeBron plays, like, I think that it is a fair analogy a bit, is that LeBron is doing stuff every game now is pretty much historic, epic, that is at levels that, I mean, people are now starting to compare him to Michael Jordan, and that's rarefied air. Like, that's, you know, and Mike Trout, at the end of his career, he could be... top five, maybe, you know, in the greatest players of all time. He's tracking that way, and I just feel like it's a bit of a lost opportunity right now. I as much as I think MLB does good about social stuff and the multimedia and stuff like that, boy, they've you know, yeah, we know more about Ohtani than we do about Trout, and that's, I mean, you can promote both players, right? It's just, it's maddening sometimes, because I think Mike Trout is you know, geez, we're all of a sudden on Mike Trout's fan clubs or agent here, what he's doing so far this year is, again, it's unbelievable. It's exceptional, and I just think more people should know about it.
On pace for the greatest season in baseball history.
Willing to bet that, like, when Mike Trout travels, he could go, like, to a matinee in another city and not get recognized.
Guaranteed.
Like, yeah,
his Q score has to be pretty low, I would say. And, yeah, in terms of, like, opportunities, like, if someone has a natural inclination towards something, like, why, if it's weather, something like L.L. Bean or some sort of, like, outdoor outfitters where it's, like, cold weather or, you know, inclement weather gear, like, that's a natural kind of, like, sponsorship deal or something. I mean, I don't know if this is... Because isn't he represented by Boris? Or maybe I'm mistaken.
I have no idea who
Harper definitely is. But
Harper is. I don't know about Trout.
We hear about Harper a lot more. And nothing against Harper.
Maybe he isn't a Boris client, and that's why we don't hear about him.
Well, maybe. But what has he done compared to Trout? Like, Harper has... Aaron Judge has got more. And I get it. He's in New York and stuff. But Trout's in California, so it's not like he's playing in Cincinnati or something like that, right? He's playing in a major market here. You know, he could be in, you know, walking down the red carpet. Sort of maybe has to fit his personality and stuff, but it just seems like we're just going to take it for granted that he just does these things year after year. And people just, you know, baseball is an insanely hard game to do at the best of times. I mean, look at, you know, Albert Pujols. I read a great article in regards to his pursuit to 3,000 here. And his first 10 years were amazing. His last eight or so has just been, like, it's been sort of a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar kind of end of his career here. It's just longevity. He gets to 3,000. It's still an amazing career. But people break down. It's hard to sustain what he's doing. And Trout, it seems like it's never ending. He's just going to keep doing what he does.
Trout is still only 27, right? So there is the potential for a breakdown. I sure hope not, because, like, Trout is so much fun to watch because of how easy he makes the game look. You hit the nail on the head about how difficult baseball is. It's probably, hitting a baseball is probably the most difficult thing to do in all of sports, and he makes it look like a cakewalk. And he's improving his defense, and he's improving his base running. The guy is on pace, as I said, the best season in baseball history right now. And it's outstanding.
He makes it effortless. And here's the other thing. He's had injuries, and he's come back from it even stronger, even better. So he's gone through adversity. Yeah, he's young and stuff, but he's bounced back even bigger, better. It's just fantastic. I mean, it's just interesting. We'll talk about him endlessly throughout this year because he's going to just keep on going. As long as he stays healthy, he's going to probably have the best season maybe ever in history.
Now, you mentioned he's not in New York. Someone else who's no longer in New York, Matt Harvey. And I know that...
The Dark Knight.
You
either die the hero or see yourself live long enough to see yourself become the villain. He's got traded to Cincinnati for Devin Masuraco. The teams are basically eating both of their salaries, so the Mets are getting a little more cash in return. It's hard to believe for me that the Mets didn't try to work harder with him. We're talking about a guy in 2013, over 178 innings pitched, had a 2.27 ERA, a .93 whip, posted 6.5 wins above replacement. The guy is a monster. He came back from Tommy John surgery in 2015 and basically did the same thing and put up largely the same numbers. That was probably the last time we saw in 2015, the last time we saw Matt Harvey be the Dark Knight, that game where he gave up the winning run to Eric Hosmer, I believe, in the World Series. But it's crazy to me to believe that they're giving up on this guy, basically for an off-injured catcher. Maybe this is the best thing for Harvey's game. He, of course, after the Tommy John surgery, had thoracic outlet syndrome. Correct me if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Which
thoracic is right. Yeah.
You know, there's the list.
Not a doctor.
The list of guys that have had this surgery to correct this is mostly a list of guys whose careers just never got back to the same point, which I guess is disappointing. Chris Carpenter, Jaime Garcia, Josh Beckett, Sean Markham, Phil Hughes, Tyson Ross, Mike Fulton-Nevitz, and Glenn Perkins are all guys that have kind of been so-so since their return from that.
Fulton-Nevitz has been pitching all right for the Cards this year.
And Ross has been good. You Mike, would probably be able to talk better about Hughes and Perkins in their returns from that. But, you know, these guys, some of them have reinvented themselves, and I'm curious to see whether or not Harvey can do that.
Well, it'll be difficult. You know, he was picked up by the... he was traded, rather, to the Reds. The Great American Ballpark, not exactly a friendly ballpark for pitchers. And so that's going to be a rough one for him in terms of if he's going to reinvent himself.
Yeah, it's not good for fastball
the rope
pitchers, especially.
To do that in a really small hitter's park. He actually is going to be starting tonight against the Dodgers in a more friendly confine, and that's Chavez. It's more of a pitcher's park.
Yeah.
So the bat signal's going up tonight.
The bat signal's going up.
He is getting his first stop. Brandon Finnegan optioned to AAA Louisville for the roster spot they needed to clear for Harvey to make this start. Finnegan actually involved on the other side of the Royals Mets face-off. He was pitching in the seventh and eighth at that point.
Correct.
He pitched some relief in that World Series.
Can I just add one thing about the Harvey thing? I got the sense reading a little bit about this. The Mets, it seemed like they might have were done with him, that they were kind of done with his maybe attitude a bit here, that he became maybe more trouble than to try and fix the situation is just to kind of get rid of the situation. And it seems really weird to say that because he was so amazing at the start of his career, but it just seemed like they just kind of maybe gave up on sort of just dealing with him, the person and the injuries and all that stuff. But maybe he gets a second chance in Cincinnati. Good luck to him at the tough ballpark to pitch in.
It's also, that NL Central is a –
Not easy for pitchers
right now.
Yeah, not easy. I am curious because he does have, like, his slider is a plus-plus pitch, right? And whether or not he's able to generate the type of speed that he used to on his fastball. Remember, he used to average, 98, 99 miles an hour? He doesn't have that anymore. His velocity is down to about 92. But it's what makes the slider a little more hittable. I'm curious about whether or not because his slider is originally a plus-plus pitch, whether or not he can have a CC Sabathia kind of renaissance behind that slider, find a way to develop a cutter, and really work off-speed more.
I was going to say, a lot of times the reinvention involves, you know, with a loss of speed, you become about the differentiation in speed between your fastest pitch and your off-speed stuff.
Right.
And the rhythm and throwing a hitter off of rhythm by like creating a really like kind of junky slow pitch.
Oh, exactly. And Sabathia's having a monster year this year doing that, exactly that. And he's what, like 37, 38 now? Sabathia's old, does not have the velocity to do it anymore. And we've seen other pitchers do this too, where they've kind of reinvent themselves. We might have to see Clayton Kershaw reinvent himself in the near future with the way he's been pitching lately. I don't know. I think Harvey is smart enough to do it. I'm just curious to see about whether or not he still has the talent to really pull it off. I hope so.
Also the patience. Like, it feels like, because they tried a bit. They wanted to demote him down to the bullpen. That didn't work. Maybe go down the minors for an assignment, and he didn't really want to do that. So that's also on him, because I still feel he thinks he's an ace, and he's certainly far from it right now, and he has to work his way back. And I mean, geez, look at Bartolo Colon as an example of someone who, you know, reinvented himself many a time and is still prospering. I mean, you can, if you're talented, you can still do it. It just seems like, I think for Matt Harvey, he has to get back to sort of understanding where he is right now. Like, I don't think he's an ace, let alone on his team, as opposed to also just the MLB. But I mean, you know, maybe a change of scenery, change of pace can help him get back to reinventing, to back to some kind of the Dark Knight.
Yeah, hopefully. I guarantee you, I'm going to be checking out that game tonight. This is the first time I'll be watching a Reds game in who knows how long, specifically for the Reds, and not just because they were the other team in the equation. Man, I hope he's going to be good again.
So one pitcher who is currently good, James Paxton.
Yeah.
Throws a no-no against the Jays.
That's
on Tuesday night. I was going to say, this must be a tough one for any Canadian baseball fan who, you know, has to admire the big Maple having, you know, one of the few Canadians in the majors right now throwing a no-no, but doing it against the Canadian team, ostensibly.
Yeah, I mean, James Paxton, we've known he was good for a very, very, very long time. Like, the guy is just a really good pitcher, of course, plagued with injuries, but it's really nice to see him throw a no-hitter. I hate that it's against the Jays, but I'm glad that he got to throw one. And just, like, it's a coming-out party, right? Like, everyone knows now that James Paxton is a monster and a great pitcher.
Came
and that's
on the
good.
Heels of a 16-strikeout performance the week prior.
He's just on a roll right now. That guy, dude's locked in.
And you know what's... Go ahead, Mike.
Go for it, dude.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I'm not as biased again, for the Jays here. I actually loved it. I thought the fans, I saw the end of it, and, you know, they were very receptive of it. I mean, if the Jays weren't going to win, they wanted to see some history, and it was historic. It was the first Canadian ever to throw a no-hitter in Canada. I mean, of course, against the Jays, but, I mean, good for him. He's battled back from injury. It seems like he's locked in there. I mean, and so the one thing is also, you know, it would be nice if the Jays can look, you know, sometimes you get lucky about that, but they got to look into the backyard here. There's more Canadians, you know, trying to make it to the major leagues and stuff, and maybe down the road they can get him in a trade or something like that. But, I mean, overall, I mean, a no-hitter, it's the third one, and here's a unique one if people didn't understand this, but this is the third no-hitter so far this season, and the third in a different country. One in Mexico, one in the States, and now one in Canada.
I hadn't realized that one in each, but Paxton only needed 99 pitches to finish the job.
That's a Maddox.
Which is crazy efficient. He threw as hard as 100 miles per hour in his final frame. A couple takeaways that I read in the Sports Illustrated. John Taylor on Wednesday wrote an article called James Paxton's No-Hitter is a Clear Product of Baseball's All-or-Nothing Era. The fact that, A, there's three no-hitters so far this season, and the season is still really young, let's be quite honest. The league as a whole is hitting just .244 this season, and that is a tie for sixth lowest in a season of play since 1871.
It is also early, though. Effectively Wild, their podcast yesterday, they mentioned that the batting average has been going up steadily every single week, though. right?
Well, so the strikeout rate record has been going up every year since 2008.
That's correct as well.
And the one thing also, if I always remember here, it's usually April. Like, it's the coldest month, right? The pitchers always are going to have the advantage to the batters. And as it warms up, it's going to get better. It is epically low, like Michael was saying there, about the sixth lowest to start the season. I just also think, you know, that's right. They're swinging for the fences a bit. And the pitchers are really good. The one that the Dodgers had, it was Bueller to start, and then they had four relievers come in. And that's just the new baseball, too, is that you get these flamethrowers coming in after a starting pitcher, and you cobble a combined no-hitter as well as just a great starting pitcher. So, I mean, there's a little bit of combination factors on that, but it's sort of like, you know, I don't know, baseball doesn't mind that because you get headlines for no-hitters, you get headlines for guys going off for three or four home run games. So, I don't think they mind it right now.
Yeah, that quick trigger to pull a pitcher even in the midst of a no-hitter. So it's happened five times this year that the starters lost a chance at a nine-inning no-hitter because they got yanked. It's the most in a season since 1991, when in the entire season it happened six times.
Oh. Wow. That's a good stat.
Yeah. I don't know whether or not this is good for baseball, though, right? Like, it's nice for...
You don't think no-hitters are good?
I think that no-hitters are good, but I think that, like, if you get too many of them, it stops being such an appointment viewing, right? Like...
I would disagree with that. I think whenever there's an alert that there's a no-hitter going on by the fifth or sixth, I think it still has the juice for it. I mean, I don't have the facts, and maybe Michael looked that up if he's by a computer, but I remember a couple years where there was like five or six in a year, and then we had a period where it was a couple years there wasn't a no-hitter. So I think it's just cyclical sometimes, and we've got three here. We might not have another one for the rest of the season. We might have three more, you know, next week, right? But I love no-hitters. I think it's still pretty cool because it as much as it seems like it's happening a little bit more, I still think there's a bit of a, you know, you get a little bit excited when you hear there's a no-hitter alert. Like, that's something that's still unique to the game of baseball. Hey, we can agree to disagree, but that's sort of, I still like no-hitters.
I'm of the opinion baseball is broad enough, there's always something to be interested in or something to enjoy or something you haven't seen before. So one of the things I want to turn to is the unexpected arrival of the baby Braves.
Oh.
And just how good this team has
been. They're fun to watch,
too. So far this season. They're currently sitting atop the NL East record of 22-14, and they are a half game up on Philadelphia. So,
I kind of figured Philadelphia was going
to
be
good. I mean,
good.
We knew they were going to about to take off, although there was some concern about the Gabe Kapler experience and just what he would do. Two of the best offensive producers are the two rookies that...
Acuña and Albies.
Acuña and Albies are two of the best OPS plus players in baseball right now.
Well, it's worked for Houston and it's worked for the Cubs. You know, I mean, this is a system that, like, if you get the right prospect that start panning out, you can start, you know, improving very quickly there. I obviously, they're way ahead of schedule. I don't think anyone expected this early, but it is fun to watch the Braves finally become back to the Braves. I mean, they were such a great franchise for 20-plus years. It's just nice for them to at least start winning again.
They are getting renaissance performances, at least one for sure, from Nick Markakis.
I was going to say, I don't know if that's sustainable, but he certainly has helped them in the early run.
He's good for fantasy, let me tell you.
He's never made an All-Star game, so this might be the first year that he makes it if he keeps up the performance. They're hoping for lightning in a bottle with Jose Bautista. We talked about him last week, and I don't know. Freddie Freeman is still hitting like a monster. They're getting good pitching performances from their staff. The two rookies, I don't know whether or not they'll keep that up, but assuming yes, or at least somewhat the similar performance over the course of the year. And I don't think they win that division. I think that division is still the Natties to lose, but I think that they're going to have a real good crack at a wild card spot. So it'll be interesting to see.
Very interesting to see. You mentioned, Nick Markakis, great for fantasy. Let's pivot to fantasy for a few minutes.
Sure.
I know that there was an interesting piece on MLB.com written by Mike Rosenbaum about some prospects to stash for your fantasy team. And obviously some folks who are producing already who going into the season might have surprised you as to being, you know, names to consider rostering. Zook, who's been surprised for you this season that want to highlight?
Well, I just mentioned a little bit back on the combined no hitter. I believe it's Buehler from the Dodgers, who is a prospect that is, I think, early again, because the sense was that he was going to be a spot pitcher, maybe just do a couple of games here and there. But because the Dodgers' rotation was so deep, and that, you know, he probably wasn't going to find a place. And it looks like he has found a place, Warren Buehler. And, someone that...
Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler. And he, it looks like he's going to stay with the club now, because the Dodgers have scuffled a bit to start the season and they need his arm. And so there's someone that, you know, I'm sure everyone has picked him up or whatever, but I think, you know, it's someone that the jury's out. Maybe you can make a trade for him, put a package together or something, get him, because it looks like there's someone like that who's going to be good for now and the future. So that's mine.
Yeah, he combined with Tony Cingrani, Yimi Garcia, and Adam Liberatore for that that combined no-no. Cingrani, actually, a former Reds prospect.
Cingrani's a former Reds prospect. RIP the Reds. someone that I wanted to highlight in terms of they've just come up and could be a real impact player on your team, Luis Gohara, also of the Braves. He got a 3-inning save last night. They're bringing him up in relief. And I think that he normally was a starter. And so maybe, I'm not sure exactly what they're planning on doing with him, but if he's going to come out of the bullpen and be a super reliever in the style of Andrew Miller or last year's Chris Devinsky, I think that you could find some really real value there in a deep league if you're looking for someone to potentially anchor your bullpen. The guy's going to be good. He's got stuff. He's got 2++ pitches and a third plus pitch. He can be something special. Luis Gohara of the Atlanta Braves.
Ooh, I like that one. He could be an SPRP as well in fantasy.
Yeah, because he's listed as a starting pitcher right now, but he could get the relief pitcher. He's going to get the relief pitcher tag very shortly. So you could get yourself a spurburp.
a spurburp?
Yeah.
One I want to mention, I was just trying to check the ESPN availability on him, but that is Jack Flaherty, the pitcher for the Cards. He has bounced back and forth between AAA and the majors this year, but has been great in both leagues. His most recent start for the Cards, 13 strikeouts over 6 2/3 innings, and he is 4-1 in 5 starts with a 2.27 ERA and a .190 batting average. As we mentioned, obviously batting average is down kind of across the board, so it's not necessarily completely indicative. But the Cardinals usually demonstrate a good capability when it comes to pitching prospects and mentoring and fostering them.
They're really good.
They really have a solid programming in place, and usually if there's a pitching prospect who's doing well, you can pretty much expect that they will continue to do well.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. The Cards are really good at that, so I think Flaherty is a good one. One more I want to highlight is Dustin Fowler.
That was the one I was going to do. I like that one. That's an excellent.
So
excellent.
We can combine on it then. The Oakland A's, former Yankees prospect, of course, completely ruined his knee last year, but seems to have come back and is doing well. Is stealing at a rate just the same as before. Got called up to the A's. So if you need some steals in your league, the guy hits for average. He could potentially hit 15 home runs and steal about 20 bases over the course of a 162-game season. So if he's not scooped up in your league and you're desperate for some steals and some pop, Dustin Fowler, somebody to look at.
I totally agree. That was one that was going to be one I wanted to also highlight, just because he's sort of been on the peripheral there. He was battling some injuries. He went down to the minors there. Kind of people have forgotten about him a bit because he was a prospect back in the day with the Yankees. 100%. I don't know how much he can – but it looks like he's going to be there for a while. Looks like he might there to stay. And like you were saying, stolen bases, just could give you some average as well. And just someone there that, you know, I think is a little bit more under the radar than maybe the other guys we talked about. Those are a little bit more highly sought out prospects. But Dustin Fowler, for sure, if you don't have him, scoop him up, see what he's going to do in the next little month here, because I think you might be happy you grabbed him.
He's going to be seeing some playing time, too, because Piscotty just went on bereavement leave, unfortunately, because of his mother.
Correct.
So he's going to be seeing some playing time, potentially at the top of the order. So we'll see. I love Dustin Fowler. Good call.
So I just looked up at the clock. We have a very little time before we have to hand things over to Democracy Now!, but we did want to mention one piece of fish news, and that is the announcement that the Goldeyes have acquired right-handed pitcher Alex Boschers. He came directly from Southern Maryland Blue Crabs, but by way of a trade that had seen him move from the Wichita Wingnuts, where he pitched very well in the American Association. This completed the trade that sent Ryan Chafee to the Blue Crabs back in January, and I think a really great move by the Goldeyes front office to pick up a solid starter in exchange for, I mean, they basically turned a reliever into a starter, and in the American Association, relievers are a lot easier to find and come by than a solid starter.
Correct. 100% agree with that. So
he was 11-4 with a 3.72 ERA and 18 starts for the Wingnuts, and he was
11
wins,
out of those starts,
20th in ERA and 10th in innings pitched. So a good innings eating performer.
And 11 out of those starts, he gave up less than 3 runs. So that's huge too.
So just a few that were not so great, but a lifetime 27-11 record with a 3.46 ERA in the American Association. Of course, they faced off against him in the American Association Championships when, of course, Wichita and Winnipeg faced each other. So they have a good sense of what this guy can bring to the mound, and excited to see him in a Goldeyes uniform. That pretty much wraps it up. Zook, thanks for phoning in. Brian, thanks for sitting in. This is the Bench Jockeys. We'll be back. You can follow us at the Bench Jockeys on Twitter, and you can check the podcast out online.
Strike 3, you're out!